We're joined right now at our news line with the senior advisor to the President of the United States, the one, the only, Karl Rove. Good to have you on the show. Welcome to Kogo, Karl.
Mark, how are you?
Doing great. You know, we saw each other at the Reagan Library about a little over a year ago. You were just getting, you know, as usual, a typical day, more heat from the usual people, you know, the left saying, Karl Rove, like you're going to sprout horns. And I watched you charm the room. Even people who said, I don't know about this Rove guy. I'm not sure I agree with him on everything. And let's see if he's a Svengali to the president here. And then, you know, you get up there and you just kind of did your thing. And you endeared yourself to the room. It's amazing to me how much you are demonized, which normally means you're so effective, so you must be demonized if you're on the other side.
Well, it comes with a job. I'll tell you, that was a fun day. And who would look bad giving a speech honoring Ronald Reagan? I mean, it's a great honor for me to be asked by Mrs. Reagan to do it, and it was a great thrill to be able to share the feelings of one person about what a big, important difference Ronald Reagan made for our country.
You bet. And, of course, he had that sunshiny optimism. Of course, that's the very thing that's getting the president in some trouble this week in the wake of the Woodward book. And I want to talk about that in just a second as well. But first up today, of course, it seems like every minute we have new information on this former representative now, Mark Foley situation. ABC News saying that he had online sex while awaiting a vote. I mean, it's so lurid. It's so sordid. And the president's come out and spoken very forcefully against this sort of thing. But you know how it's getting played. In fact, the Wall Street Journal today says that the party, the Republican Party, has new reason to worry about Christian conservatives and suburban soccer moms. They're trying to talk down the vote, trying to depress the vote, aren't they, with this story?
Well, it is sordid, and it's shocking, and it's disappointing, and it's disgusting, as the president said today. House Republican leadership did the right thing by demanding his immediate resignation. Look, when they saw the first email where he asked a page for a picture, they went and admonished him to stay away from the pages. It turns out now that at least two news organizations, in addition to ABC, the St. Pete Times and the Miami Herald, also had the same email, and one of the newspapers decided on the basis of it to do nothing at all. But when the subsequent set of earlier emails and instant messaging came out, the leadership did the absolute right thing by doing, first, demanding that he resign immediately, and secondly, referring it to appropriate law enforcement officials, for action.
Are you and the president in what Woodward is alluding in his book about state of denial in too much of an optimistic mode? Again, getting back to the whole Reagan issue here.
You know, what's amazing to me is how out of touch that title is, because throughout the book, Woodward will quote from a president's speech in which the president says, here are things that we have a right to be optimistic about, but he will not quote the elements of that same speech would say, we face a very difficult path ahead. We have grave dangers that confront us. We face an enemy that's ever elusive, ever dangerous, ever adapting to the situation. And it's going to require real resolve, will, and courage, and sacrifice in order to prevail. You remember at certain times the president gets accused of fear of trying to scare people.
Yep.
Well, Woodward, in his book, will selectively quote from speeches and say, oh, Bush is in a, quote, state of denial because he says this positive thing, while ignoring the very balanced perspective the president has been giving in these same speeches where he talks about the difficulties we face.
Yeah, it is kind of funny to watch how that gets covered, and often when the president gives a speech where he reminds people of the difficulties, they'll say, well, there's nothing new there. You know, we've heard that speech before. Well, you need to hear the speech again because it is, as it's been said, a long slog. This isn't ready and be wrapped up tomorrow morning, is it?
Right. And look, with all due respect to Mr. Woodward, I mean, some of these things, I was warned by a friend of mine, Chuck Colson, that Woodward was great at fiction. And there is clearly, there are things in here which are fictionalized. I mean, for example, we've had this kerfluffle about a meeting in July in which Woodward says Tenet and his chief deputy met with Condi Rice and said, we expect an imminent attack, and that supposedly Tenet and his aide left thinking Rice blew them off, when in reality everybody says, look, no he didn't, including Tenet, said, I was satisfied. In fact, the 9/11 Commission looked specifically at that particular meeting and was comfortable. Ben Van Eastie, the most ardent Democrat partisan on the 9/11 Committee, even he says, look, we looked at that and there was an appropriate response to it, which is, they said, we're worried about threats. We don't know. We could be inside the country, could be outside of the country, but we're worried about it. And we don't have any more information than we've had before, but we're worried about the level of chatter we're seeing. Well, Condi Rice says, yes, I heard that, and but no specific information about anything else we should and could be doing at that point.
Karl Rove is with us, senior advisor to the president. He's here with us on News Radio 600 KOGO and everywhere on Clear Channel Network and on Kogo.com. The story last week when the president came out and gave the remarks about the Democrats being a party shifting from the party of FDR to the and the party of Truman to the cut-and-run party, was that your line or his, or was that shooting from the hip? I'm sure it was more premeditated, but,
well,
but where did it originate?
The president's view is this, that we had once a Democratic Party and a Republican Party that had widespread agreement on international issues, and that there were large elements in both parties which favored strong national defense, a robust use of American influence when necessary to protect America's vital interests and keep America safe. Now, instead, we have a Democrat Party where far too many of the leaders of the party and the members of their congressional delegations don't seem to understand the nature of the enemy that we face. We've seen in recent weeks four examples of this. We saw it in a vote last week on the CIA interrogation program, which has yielded us information that's kept America safe the last 5 years and has allowed us to sweep more of these high-value terrorist leaders into our hands. And the, you know, over 80% of Democrats in the Congress voted against continuing that that program. Over 80% in the House and 75% of the Democrats in the Senate, including both senators from California and virtually every Democrat member of the House from California. We saw it in the vote on the terrorist surveillance program. In the aftermath of 9/11, the president said if a suspected al-Qaeda terrorist is calling from, you know, wherever across the world into the United States, we want to know who they're calling, why they're calling them, and what they're planning. And in a vote in the U.S. House of Representatives to give this program additional force of law, over 80% of the Democrats in the House voted against it. We saw it in the vote on the Patriot Act, where when we went to reauthorize it, the vast majority of Democrats in the House and Senate voted against its reauthorization. And we see it in this idea that Jack Murtha has, Congressman Jack Murtha,
right,
of we're going, you know, he says, and Democrats have flocked behind it, including Nancy Pelosi, to say, look, let's immediately withdraw, immediately stand down U.S. troops in Iraq, and then withdraw them in order to be, quote, a strategic rapid response force in the region.
From Okinawa or somewhere.
From Okinawa,
yeah,
which is, you know, 4,900 miles away from the Mideast. And that's assuming you get over flight rights on the People's Republic of China and the People's Islamic Republic of Iran. And something tells me neither Iran nor China are going to like 101st Airborne Brigade flying over in C-17s on their way back into Iraq. And, I mean, it shows the thinness, the, you know, the contempt almost that they have for the ordinary American voter, that they would say, oh, yes, our plan is to take care of all these troops out of the Mideast and put them in Okinawa, and they can be able to take care of the situation from there.
Well, as the president said earlier today, and you've been there with him as usual, the president says, quote, if you listen closely to some of the leaders of the Democratic Party, it sounds like they think the best way to protect the American people is wait until we're attacked again. Now, I'm sure that'll give us the usual response throughout the day, and they're saying that he's instilling fear again, and somehow we're unpatriotic if we criticize. And certainly the American way of life has had room for criticism. But, you know, when Bush comes out and says the Democrats are acting like the cut-and-run party, and then Nancy Pelosi comes out the next day and says the president's out of touch with reality, that seems like that's kind of harsh and not productive either, isn't it?
Well, look, I mean, it's very straightforward. The Democrats, for example, on this vote on the CIA interrogation program that they said should not be in place, well, which of these attacks, as the president said today, were they willing to accept? This has helped us stave off attacks on the United States, both here and abroad. It helped us stave off an attempt to fly airplanes into the Canary Wharf and into Heathrow Airport in Great Britain, to blow up the U.S. consulate in Pakistan, and to put agents inside the United States with plots. Which of these are would the Democrats who voted against the CIA interrogation has been willing to accept? Because that's, you know, votes have consequences. When we send people to Washington and they vote yes or no on bills, those votes added up have a consequence. And their consequence would be to make America weaker.
Karl Rove is with us here on News Radio 600 KOGO. Mark Larson on Kogo. And I'm looking at some of the Well, the reports, I was watching Russert on NBC last night, you probably saw him saying, well, you know, Brian, there's a lot of panic in the Republican Party. Now, this gets back to the Christian conservative base and conservatives in general, the soccer moms and so forth. I pulled an article out of an earlier Economist earlier this year asking about you, Mr. Rove, you know, what chance does Mr. Rove have of winning this battle? It says conservatives are spitting blood over everything from spending to Mr. Bush's Nixonian weakness for big government to his lipstick on a pig immigration reform, which, as you know, is a hot, hot issue here, and we still have a lot of dissatisfied, not just conservatives, but people saying, are we going to do something about this border? There's a lot of issues conservatives need some help on here, need some encouragement. Can you do that?
Well, look, two things. First of all, this is a conservative president, and they see it in his approach to the global war on terror, in his approach to values, in his approach to cutting taxes. And let me talk for just a second about spending. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy in assuming there are problems when there aren't and ignoring problems where there are. The problem in spending is not discretionary domestic spending. For example, this year we actually cut it over last year's levels, from last year's levels. And last year was kept flat, and the previous 2 years were below inflation. The problem is not on discretionary domestic spending. The problem is also not in military spending, where we're in a war and we need to strengthen our military, particularly after in the 90s we let things drift. The problem is in entitlement spending. And this president has taken on entitlement spending by having the first cut since 1997 passed by Congress in entitlement spending and by tackling the problems of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid reform. And, you know, that's what people want him to do, is to take on these big issues. And conservatives in particular understand that the threat to our economic future is not in the day-to-day budget of the United States government. We can manage those things. What is really problematic is the spending that we built in the budget on automatic pilot in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and we need to do something to address those before our kids get given the bill.
Facing the same kind of things that Ford and GM are facing, as a matter of fact, out of Detroit. Now, on the border, what's the news there? We got the extension of the fence. It's not going to happen next week as far as what the Senate's doing, moving on that. But what's next, and are we going to enforce the existing laws?
Well, look, we are. I mean, I think people will be shocked to understand that over the last year, I think it's approaching 1.3 million people have been apprehended at the border and returned across the border. This administration ended the several, like, 30-year practice for people from other than Mexico of simply releasing them back into society with a little piece of paper that said, here's your court date, we hope you show up, the so-called catch-and-release policy. We have it catch and return. We've built enough beds. We've sped up the processing of these people out of the country under expedited removal so that literally we no longer release anyone. The only people we do release are a small number of people, literally a handful of people a week, literally single digits a week over the last several months, of people who are not flight risks, who have a severe, asylum question in mind, or have illness or something where they can be given into the care of family or friends or a support group. But literally, we've ended the practice of catch and release. And so now we catch and return them. And the message is getting out now in Brazil and in China and Africa and deeper into South America that if you get on an airplane, fly to Mexico, spend that money, get on a bus, get to the border, hire a coyote to get you across the border, and you get caught on the U.S. side, that you're not going to be released into society to just disappear. We will put you on an airplane and fly you home, and that's exactly what's happening. Having said that, though, and I know this is controversial in certain parts of California, We can keep spending money on controlling the border, but until we have a guest worker program that allows willing workers to be matched with willing employers for jobs people won't do, like picking lettuce in the Central Valley, or slinging tar on a roof in Austin, Texas in the middle of August, or picking fruit in the Northwest, or providing, you know, changing the sheets at a summer resort in the upper Midwest, we're not going to be able to reduce the pressure on the border enough so that these resources that we're putting down there, we're spending billions, we're doubling the size of the Border Patrol. By the time the president leaves office, the Border Patrol will have been doubled in size during his time in office. We have more than doubled the number of beds that we've got available to keep people in. We are spending a lot more money on resources like fences and vehicle barriers and sensors and UAVs and a sophisticated technology and all-weather roads and observation points and lighting systems and surveillance. We are deploying 6,000 National Guard to the border so that they will back up the Border Patrol and free the Border Patrol to actually put its highly qualified and well-trained people on the border doing their job while the National Guard provides support in everything from building things to manning headquarters.
But not enforcement, right? They're overseeing,
no.
doing
well,
more
than that? Except that, you know, they do have the rules of engagement allow them to interdict and detain, and they've detained, I think the last number I saw was something approaching, you know, 12 or 13,000 people that they've detained, even though they're not their principal function. Their principal function is to do the things necessary to free up the Border Patrol to do what it needs to do. And remember, if you're picking up close to 1.3 million people a year, you're picking up a lot of people a day, and that's what the Border Patrol does and does well.
Carl Rove with us here. I appreciate your time. You actually spent a little extra time than we had allotted here. Very quickly, Hillary in 2008, Dick Morris says that she's the next president. You buy that?
No.
Okay, that's good. I don't know how you've kept so calm, cool, collected over the last year. If I were you, I'd be out, you know, finding Dick. Go out and find Armitage and slap Armitage around a little bit for letting you take the heat on the plane deal.
Well, you know, you can't take it seriously. I mean, you can't take yourself too seriously. And I've got a great family and sustained by faith and a lot of prayers of friends. So
that's right. We have a mutual friend in Chuck Colson. It's good to hear that you're talking
wonderful
to him
guy.
As well.
Oh man, what a terrific person!
And just to irritate the lefties who are saying, "I can't believe you're being so nice to Rove about this," the Mount Soledad case. Thank you to you for the advice to the president for doing what we advocated so strongly here in San Diego, leading the fight to keep it as it is, where it is. That cross up there as part of the war memorial.
Well,
much appreciated.
Duncan Hunter, as you know, is a passionate advocate on this and did a terrific job of making it clear to people and think about this. This is a sign of the, you know, sort of moral relativism that pops up far too often, the secular insensitivity. I mean, and when U.S. military vessels leave San Diego Harbor, that's generally the last thing they see when they depart and the first thing they see when they return. And it is just astonishing to me that people would be, so intent upon removing any sense of the sacred from the public square that they would attempt to have that fantastic and wonderful tribute torn down.
Thank you again. Appreciate it very much, Carl. Good to talk to you. Keep up the good fight.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. Carl Rove with us here on News Radio 600 KOGO, live and local on the big one, News Radio 600 KOGO.